Welcome to The Expert Vet. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Donna Spector, who is The Expert Vet. She's a board-certified veterinary internist in Chicago, here to help explain medical conditions in dogs and cats. If you'd like to hear more episodes of this show or any of the Pet Talk shows I co-host with experts, please go to RadioPetLady.com and visit the podcast libraries. And I look forward to seeing you October 2nd and 3rd in New York City at my Dog Film Festival. All the info is at DogFilmFestival.com. The Expert Vet is a production of Eight Paws LLC and Dr. Donna Spector, which are solely responsible for its content. And are brought to you by Halo, holistic natural dog and cat foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Can you identify what's on the label of your own dry dog food? Halo uses real meat in their kibble. No rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. Their new grain-free recipes give you even more healthy choices for your pooch's dinner. And Dr. Donna's dream for a super low-carb canned cat food is here. Halo's pate-style cat food has only 5% carbohydrates. Halo is a private company, partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they emphasize giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition, too. This show is also brought to you by Canine Active, a safe, non-toxic pain reliever with a proprietary anti-inflammatory ingredient, Alpha-G, made of naturally occurring amino acids and homeopathic compounds known to provide pain relief in dogs without the side effects and risks of drugs. Canine Active is made in America by the company that has had outstanding success with their human product for people with pain who want to avoid ibuprofen and NSAIDs. Now there is Canine Active, an innovative formula for dogs to improve quality of life for the canine members of the family. Canine Active, proven safe and a proven pain reliever. Dr. Donna, thank you so much for taking the time to do this very special show about the dog flu. You are in the Chicago area, and you yourself have the flu. So those of you listening, Dr. Donna got out of her sick bed to help us all understand what is this dog flu, who's in jeopardy, what can we do about it, and would you just explain it to us? So, Dr. Yeah. Donna, thank you for helping us with this, because those of us that don't live in the Chicago area, I think we all know enough about how diseases transport themselves around to know that, you know, Chicago today, Liberia tomorrow, right? Yeah, I mean, this right. is the nature of the world. So tell us what's going on.
Well, and I think that's a nice introduction because for those following the dog flu outbreak, just yesterday, the news, unexpected news broke on this thing that the Chicago area dog flu outbreak, it's actually due to a very unexpected strain of flu. I think many of us, you know, and just to clear up some confusion, you know, there's kennel cough.
Right.
Then there's dog flu, which we've kind of known has been in an outbreak scenario in this country since, 2007. When there were do you remember all those greyhounds at the track
yes.
in Florida were
yes.
affected by dog flu? And that was actually, it came from horses, so horses
Uh-oh.
Passed it to dogs.
Oh boy.
And that was the H3N8. That's the name of the specific flu. It was an A type flu. But the special code number was H3N8. So we recognize that dog influenza is not real common. When I say dog influenza or dog flu, it's the same thing.
Right.
So this is not the most common cause of respiratory illness or dog flu-like symptoms in dogs. So that's when they're like, okay, this is kind of an outbreak scenario in this country. We need to, that's when the flu vaccine for dogs became available. It was developed for this H3N8, which is the specific sort of dog flu. Now, again, this is different than kennel cough. Your dog goes to the border, he comes back and he's coughing and he has a runny nose. Kennel cough is a whole different beast. It's more of a bacterial infection. They can have other sorts of viruses, but it's not the dog flu.
Let me just ask a question, because you did bring this up once before in a show, that while there is a Bordetella vaccine, because is Bordetella the grown-up word for kennel cough?
Yes, Bordetella is the grown-up word for the bacteria that causes
right.
kennel cough.
But I remember you were saying way back when we talked about this on a show, that there's actually several strains of it and that there's a nasal way you can be given this vaccine, if you will, but that it doesn't even cover all the kinds of this bacterial, non-life-threatening version of the dogs having a cold.
Right. And so that's what I just want to make sure we're identifying. There are really three different things going on that could cause similar symptoms. Kennel cough is very common. It's rarely fatal. It's, you know, it's like you go to the kennel, you get, you know, you'll get bacterial infections from another dog. There are minor viruses like para influenza or other things that can also be involved, but it's not a dog flu virus. So that's, and there is a vaccine available for that, and it does help minimize. That's the one if you go into the border or the groomer, they're like, oh, has your dog had the kennel cough vaccine?
Right.
Before you board here, you have to have your kennel cough.
Right,
vaccine.
Right.
You say yes, the dog gets to be boarded, no problem.
So no problem, except cough. For he could get a different strain of kennel cough if another dog there happens to be a carrier.
Right. And so then we move into dog flu, which is the real influenza virus. The one that has been circulating for years in this country is H3N8. It's dog flu. A vaccine was developed. So again, dogs that board frequently and go to the groomer frequently, go to dog shows. You know, these dogs that have increased risk where they contact a lot of other dogs and they're contacting dogs from all over the country. You know, that's a lifestyle, just like people.
Right, right.
The reason you choose to get a flu shot is like, hey, I go into schools, I go in here, I work with other people. You know, if your lifestyle is such that you're going to come into contact with sick people, it's worthwhile to consider a flu vaccine every year.
Right.
So the H3N8 dog flu vaccine came into being. And so at risk or dogs with those kind of lifestyles, they should be vaccinated with their flu vaccine. So all of a sudden in Chicago, you know what is hitting the fan? People are going on spring break. You know, spring break here starts mid-March and ends mid-April.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, these reports of dog flu. We know it's not kennel cough because it's way more serious. These dogs have fevers of 105 degrees.
Wow.
They are, you know, just runny nose, runny eyes, coughing, sneezing, lethargic, don't want to eat. You know, I mean, they're really, really sick dogs. This is not typical of kennel cough, and it's not responding to any antibiotics. You know, it's just, so it's clear that it's viral. So these dogs are being tested for dog flu, and they're coming up negative. We're like, well, this is strange. What's going on? And, you know, over 1,000 cases have been reported. And on dogs, there's been five, you know, they're so far reporting 5 deaths from it. I'm sure those numbers are actually much higher. But
in other words, there really are many more dogs than that. They just haven't been reported as such.
I mean, let me just say, I work in a veterinary clinic, and I go into a primary veterinary clinic. They're not reporting their cases.
They're too busy.
They're so flipping busy. They're not getting on the phone and reporting the 25 cases they saw last week.
Right. And then they have to stay on hold and, oh, no, you called the wrong place. They don't have personnel for that.
Reporting is not a perfect, you know, scenario by any means. We all hope that it happens. And we know it's been reported. The numbers are much, much higher than, you know, and deaths associated with it are probably much higher than the reported 1,000 cases and 5 deaths. So, but what was happening, these dogs are having blood tests and nasal swabs and all these things. They're sending them to the labs and everything's coming back negative for dog flu. It's like, okay, well, this is clearly dog flu. You know, there's something odd going on.
In other words, these dogs have influenza, but it's not the dog flu that we have called by those call nutters, which was the only flu for dogs that was identified previously.
Right. And flu testing is very specific. So when we send in a sample, we're testing it for H3N8. It's a specific dog flu virus.
Yes.
And there's no uptick in cases. There's none of these dogs are coming up positive for H3N8.
Then it becomes becomes one of those, like that movie Contagion. I mean, not exactly, but I mean, I always bring that up. It's like,
which comes to the next phase of the story. That's when the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, Cornell University, Wisconsin University, Ames, Iowa, that has the big infectious disease lab. They are all over this, like,
wow,
state, white on rice, if you will.
Because
they're like, this is not this is not the typical dog flu. Where is this coming from? They're in like lockdown mode. We need to find out where this virus, what this virus is, where it's coming from. Is it going to be able to infect other species, obviously, including humans?
Wow.
That's why CDC is so interested in it. So yesterday news broke, by the way, we have a new strain of dog flu now in this country. And this one is H3N2, and that doesn't sound like that should be that big of a difference, but it creates a whole different strain.
It's a whole new scenario that no one had anticipated.
Right. And none of the tests that we have available to us at the lab to test for these things, I mean, nothing picks it up because there's no cross reactivity. It's like how you get a flu vaccine one year,
yes,
and the next year your flu vaccine isn't going to necessarily protect against the flu because the flu changes and it mutates and it reassorts and it rearranges. It's a very smart virus.
And each year they come up with a different strain and they guess and hope that will be the one that they're going to vaccinate people against. This year in humans, there was something they were referring to as the super flu that my 96-year-old father got and was really, really ill. The beautiful assisted living facility where my father-in-law is living, he's 95. Mm-hmm. 8 individuals died from the super flu. It was kept quiet, but the place was on a 100% lockdown quarantine. Right. Everyone stayed in their room. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's find out how do you contain this when you're talking about dogs who are on the street, in your home, and how did this happen? And were all 1,000 or even 10,000 of those dogs, did they have something in common with their exposure that would explain it? We'll be right back after this quick break. The Radio Pet Lady Network is brought to you in part by Spot Platinum, an allergy test to help discover which elements in your dog's environment or diet may be causing his scratching or licking. He may have allergies that Spot Platinum can determine and for which they can make a USDA-approved serum custom-tailored to your dog's specific needs to control his symptoms, which you give in oral drops. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done more than 500,000 allergy tests over 25 years. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. Support for this show also comes from VaxiCheck, a simple test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog or puppy is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. Shelters can use VaxiCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones and avoid unnecessarily over-vaccinating dogs. VaxiCheck for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxiCheck for cats is coming soon. This show is also supported by Precious Cat Litter, owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian who has created many different low-dust litters for the health of all members of the family. For the special needs of every cat, from kittens to seniors, from long-haired to those with out-of-litter box problems who can get back in the box with Cat-A-Track Litter. Precious Cat's new litter, Touch of the Outdoors, is made with field grasses grown in their own fields, bringing the natural scent of the outdoors to provide environmental enrichment for indoor cats. Dr. Donna, H3N2, is there some reason they can't give it a completely different name so it doesn't sound so much like H3N8?
No, that's
how it's done?
All flu viruses are identified by an H number and an N number. And
you
know, those that are smarter than you and I, they don't get it confused. So, now, again, the information has come out yesterday. This is a canine flu virus that has been identified in Asia, so in parts of Korea, China. So it is an Asian virus, and they are believing that it originated in birds, so chickens, avian. It's an avian strain virus that is now adapted to a mammalian host, mammal, obviously dogs. And it originating from Asia in the birds, it's adapted to mammals, and now it's crossed the continent. And so that's, that is worth watching, and that's why, again, the CDC is so interested in it, because different viruses have different, what we call virulence, the ability to change, the ability to adapt from one host. You know, we've always talked about flu being host specific. If you're a human, you're going to get human flu. If you're a dog, you're going to get dog flu. But the fact that this started as a bird flu virus and is adapted into the mammalian population, and we now know that this virus actually has the ability to affect both dogs and cats.
Oh my gosh.
So if you are a dog owner, and you have a cat in your household as well, your cat can get this H3N2 virus. So, of course, the concern is it going to adapt and change a little bit more? And will it be able to be transmissible into the human population? And we are not
seeing
that. There's been no identification that this has infected a human, but this is why the CDC is watching it like a hawk. There are at Cornell and at Ames, Iowa, they are doing research right now, right down to like the nitty gritty pieces of the virus to see if it's got some of the genes that are going to be able to code for it to like move into the human population. I'm sure that that information will be coming in the next couple of days because they're working just voraciously at
around the clock. I mean, really brilliant people. And that's why we've gone out of our way to make sure to get this show to everybody immediately, because one thing about information is how much disinformation, misinformation, and people don't tell you stuff so as not to alarm you. Other people repeat something like, you know, the telephone game, and they sort of get it wrong. I have about a dozen questions for you, but the first one is, when the avian flu happened in Asia, Asian, avian, those words sound pretty similar too, they had to kill millions or hundreds of thousands of flocks of ducks, chicken, geese, I guess, which are a very big protein source in Asia, because, question mark, it would kill off all of those birds and perhaps other birds and or could spread to people? Did it ever spread to people? It did, I think.
Yeah, it did. And so, and, you know, and I don't have all the specifics of the Asian, you know, flu epidemic, but certainly, you know, the concern is about running rampant through their avian population, but also because it mammalian adapted. So similar to what this one is doing, it started in birds, but it adapted to infect mammals. And so because of that, and how rampant that disease was, they called out, you know, had to kill, you know, just tons and tons of birds. So
what about the swine flu? That was another situation. I remember in England, which is a heavily pork-based meat-eating country, I believe they had to kill and then bury in huge landfills, again, millions of pigs, right?
Right. I mean, and this is, you know, this is exactly the concern because, you know, these swine origin, whether it's an avian origin or swine origin influenza, they originated there. But then, you know, in the case of swine flu, you know, it started infecting humans. And so, you know, I mean, you have to, you have to stop those outbreaks how and where and when, where you can.
So what we're saying is the one that was already a mammalian flu, which you'd think it'd be easier for a flu to find its way from one mammal to another.
Right, exactly.
So this one's already starting in a mammal, but maybe it started in the bird population.
Right.
The jump to humans is not only not unthinkable, it's highly thinkable since it happened with the bird and the pig flu.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, are the dogs that are dying just the very old, and humans, the very young and the very old die?
And that's exactly, and that's what we want to help people, you know, navigate through this as well. So just as you said, the very young and the very old, as well as anyone, any pet with immune compromising disorders, if you're taking chemotherapy, if you're on steroids for something, if you're this, if you're that. So if you're diabetic, for example, I mean, that kind of makes you immune.
No kidding. I didn't even realize that.
But generally, yes, the very young and the very old. So in limiting, you know, the reason we're in this epidemic scenario, without a doubt, is spring break. Everyone is kenneling and boarding.
Oh,
and,
I see.
You know, I mean, that's why it happens right now. We always get a bit of an uptick of kennel cough, of the regular old dog flu during this time of year, because this is when people, more than anything, are out vacationing with families. They're putting their dogs at the boarding facilities.
Yes.
This is not a kick in the groin to the boarding facilities. I mean, they can be as clean as they want, but, you know, it's like kids going to daycare.
Absolutely.
You know,
they get head lice and they get the flu.
Exactly.
Well, and that's why the greyhounds had this epidemic, because they're kept all together in close quarters.
So the take home message is anywhere a dog communes with other dogs, this is dog park. This is the, you know, even though there's, you know, maybe acres and acres of land at a dog park, I mean, these viruses can live outside the body for 48 hours. So Fluffy could have sneezed and coughed all over the ground here.
And another dog sniffs it.
Biff comes up and sniffs that a day later, there's your exposure. So it doesn't have to be like somebody sneezing in your face. The viruses do last outside the body, on clothing for about 24 hours, on your hands for about 12 hours. So if you're petting someone's dog and, you know, the dog ends up being sick and you've gone home and petted your dog without washing your hands, I mean, that flu virus can last for 12 hours. I mean, that's why flu spreads so rapidly in the human population, too, because it is killed by basic disinfectants, bleach compounds. You know, I mean, basic disinfectants are going to kill it. It's not hard to kill, but the kicker is that dogs who are infected with flu viruses, generally, they are the most contagious 2 to 4 days before their signs occur.
Which is always the most scary thing about illnesses like this.
So they're going to be running down the street, happy and healthy, looking great, no problem.
Yes.
And then 3 days later, they're going to be like, ooh, I don't feel so good.
Well, look at Ebola. Ebola, people, you know, until they spike to temperature.
Yeah, that exposure is so much scarier because it's weeks, right?
Yes.
So viruses are unique in that way, and that they can, your dogs are most contagious before they even show signs. And so right now, especially in the Chicago area, but other areas of the Midwest, other areas on spring break, let's be cautious. You know, ideally try to get yourself don't put your dog at the border in the grooming facility. Have a dog walker come in. Have someone stay at your home if you're planning on a trip just, you know, in the upcoming few weeks at least. Limit time at dog park. Don't go when you're going into, you know, Petco, PetSmart, some of these places that have communal water bowls outside.
Yes.
You know, don't be allowing your dog. And that's so important for so many reasons, Giardia, other viruses.
Yes, that we don't think about. I mean, this is a really a wake-up call. We think of our dogs as being so almost immune, so hardy and sturdy, and we only worry about, you know, like tick exposure. We don't realize that they can give each other illnesses.
And even if you've got your dog on leash and you're walking around the neighborhood and you see another happy, healthy looking dog.
Nope.
You know, don't be nose into nose contact right now. Just, you know, don't even, you know, just wave, be friendly, but just don't allow the dogs to, you know, to commune, because you don't know. You have no idea. I mean, I had a neighbor that, you know, wasn't even aware that this was happening, and she took the dog in to get it groomed. The dog was there 3 hours, and now, about a week later, this dog is sick.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, it's a mild case, but still, it is a real thing that's happening to real people, normal people, you know, people that are very good owners, people that are clean and hygienic and do all the right things. You are not exempt from this.
Which, of course, is what makes it even scarier, because, you know, your average precautions. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, let's talk about, you know, whatever preventive, protective, beyond what you've talked about, and then what is the treatment. We'll be right back after this quick break. The Radio Pet Lady Network is supported by Halo, holistic natural dog and cat foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Can you identify what's on the label of your own dry dog food? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. And their new grain-free recipes give you even more healthy choices for your pet's dinner. Halo's super low-carb pate-style canned cat food has an amazingly low 5% carbohydrates, respecting the obligate carnivore's need for quality protein. Halo is a private company partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they emphasize giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com, because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition, too. This show is also brought to you by Canine Active, a safe, non-toxic pain reliever with a proprietary anti-inflammatory ingredient, Alpha-G, made of naturally occurring amino acids and homeopathic compounds known to provide pain relief in dogs without the side effects and risks of drugs. Canine Active is made in America by the company that has had outstanding success with their human product for people with pain who want to avoid ibuprofen and NSAIDs. Now there is Canine Active, an innovative formula for dogs to improve quality of life for the canine members of the family. Canine Active, proven safe and a proven pain reliever. This show is also brought to you by Vivimmune Chews, a natural supplement using Oxy-C beta, a new active ingredient based on oxidized beta carotene found in food like red and orange vegetables. Vivimmune is a chewable that has been scientifically shown to support immune function in dogs and cats, with the main benefit to joints, skin, and digestion, usually seen within a month. For my own dog, Maisie, Vivimmune stopped her shedding in weeks and brought a high shine to her coat. Shelters and rescues that receive donations of Vivimmune reported improvement in skin conditions for some of their dogs and cats, and their coats were shinier too. Vivimmune can help pets lead the healthiest possible life. We are back. Dr. Donna, before you tell us what the treatment is for this and if there's a choice in treatment or if one should go to an internist, should it be a higher level of treatment? When we talk that this was an Asian dog flu that originated in birds, in other words, dogs in Asia, Korea, Taiwan, Japan, maybe China, these dogs had this very H3N2 flu that had not been here yet?
Correct. They've been dealing with this, and I don't want to misspeak, but I believe that this virus, H3N2, has been in the dog population in China and Korea since 2006. And if it wasn't 2006 or 7, I mean, they've had it over there for a while.
Okay, so you know I have a show called Tales from China with my wonderful co-host, Mary Peng, from the mm-hmm. International Center for Veterinary Services in Beijing, and I'm going to be in touch with her. And in fact, I'll do a show about what their experience has been, because one of the things that we've never discussed this on Tales from China, mm-hmm. but we have discussed rabies and people in our country and certainly in Great Britain where, you know, all these closed borders have kept rabies out of those island nations forever.
Right.
The culls of thousands of dogs at a time in cities in Beijing when rabies mm-hmm. appears happens because, of course, which we don't really understand, we haven't seen it firsthand, it is fatal, and hundreds of people die a year in China yeah. from rabies dog bites, and because mm-hmm. they don't have spay-neuter, and they don't have closely owned dogs, they're community loose dogs, and they don't have a rabies vaccination program really in place yet, mm-hmm. the dogs have to be rounded up and killed. Mm-hmm. She's never mentioned this happening with the dog flu. It'll be very interesting to find out from her if it's had 7 or 8 years to gestate, if you will, mm-hmm. in China, has it ever become a human flu? I mean, it would kind of put our minds at rest if it didn't become a human one yet.
It has not yet. And I have that information. Even
oh, good.
Now. So it's avian, you know, avian origin. I just confirmed it's been in Asia since 2007, and it has infected dogs and cats there, but it has not made an appearance into the human population that's been reported. But you know, whenever we've now seen something cross a continent.
Yes.
Asia's a long way away. So
boy, is it ever. But is this, you know,
here,
in
what,
San Francisco, I happen to know of a number, and there are some even here on the East Coast. In San Francisco, Rocket Dog Rescue and several others have been bringing in dogs from Taiwan, street mm-hmm. dogs, small dogs, which are very adoptable because a lot of situations people need or want a small dog.
Correct.
They've been flying them in from Taiwan since the Dog Bible came out, and I did a book signing in San Francisco, so we're talking a decade. Mm-hmm. So that's a darn easy way. I mean, fly in and they bring with them whatever they bring with them, no matter how many inoculations you give them.
You know, and getting a little off topic, but this is why we now see diseases in this country that we haven't previously seen. You know, we have diseases that used to only be in Saudi Arabia and, you know, in Italy and, you know, some of these unusual infections. You know, we do see things now because of the readily, you know, how easy travel is between continents.
Are you saying we see them in humans that didn't?
No, we see them in dogs.
Oh, in dogs. So we also, you mentioned the horses that mm-hmm. this had passed between dogs and horses. Those are...
Well, the original dog flu, which is H3N8, that's the one that started here in Florida, and it was an equine virus that adapted to dogs and infected all the greyhounds.
So what is the treatment? I mean, obviously, antibiotics don't work against the flu any more than they work against cancer or the common cold. So what is there to give?
Right. So exactly. I mean, this is, you know, this is just like when you've got the flu, you know that you're going to be for anywhere from 5 to 7 to 10 days. You're going to be laid up. You're going to have the runny nose. So what do? You eat bland foods. You drink warm tea. You moisturize your passageways. You have soft tissues and clean up. You know, I mean, it's
you
always
wait. And you rest.
Wait it out.
You wait.
You
it
don't
out.
Go to work. You don't. You know. Yeah. I mean, dogs, thank goodness, aren't doing, you know, a lot of strenuous activities usually, but they generally are going to need, if they're very severely affected, IV fluids. The flu, because the viral component of it can actually rip through your nose and make it very raw, and then you can get secondary bacterial infections.
Oh my God!
So sometimes antibiotics are appropriate if you've got evidence of severe infection, like a sinus infection.
Yes.
If you end up with sinus sort of infections, that is The virus causes damage to those areas, and then the bacteria that live in the nose invade. So sometimes antibiotics are appropriate. Also, excuse me, in the dog flu, many dogs are developing secondary bacterial pneumonia, and that's what's really
and that's what's killing them.
And so, but you have to recognize that, you know, if your dog all of a sudden is rapid shallow breathing, coughing a lot, coughing up phlegm, you know, I mean, it could be a bacterial pneumonia. So you know, you have to be on the heightened awareness for that, keeping them warm, you know, not over, you know, not trying to get them out to walk, and, you know, just really being
bed rest. How do you diagnose that pneumonia with a chest X-ray?
Chest X-ray. We use a combination of blood work, like looking at the CBC, the white blood cell count, taking chest X-rays to look for evidence of pneumonia. And what I would call out to all owners is, if you have a dog right now that is having respiratory signs, make sure you call your veterinarian. When you call them, say, my dog is showing, you know, I boarded my dog a week ago. My dog now is coughing and has signs of, you know, this, and is lethargic. Make sure they know, because you don't want to just take your dog into the waiting room.
Hello.
With 10 other healthy, you know, yes, relatively healthy-ish dogs. So veterinary clinics would really appreciate right now a phone call to say, because they'll make you sit in your car, or they should make you sit in
your car.
Very
good point.
When they're ready for you, they'll come out and get you, because they don't, we can't expose the whole waiting room of animals to these diseases, or they'll bring you right in. And many veterinary clinics have an isolation room. So you walk right in. Don't let your dog's feet hit the ground. Don't, you know, carry them in.
No kidding. Wow.
You know, these are kind of common sense things, but you don't really think about it. You take your dog to the vet when he's sick.
Exactly.
So, but don't let them walk in. Don't let them snuff around. You know, carry them if they're not so big, you know, or ask the receptionist to come out and help you get the dog in, you know, so you're not contaminating the whole environment. But also another point to that is, if you think your dog is really sick, because unfortunately I've seen a lot of veterinarians saying, oh, we think it's probably the dog flu, we'll dispense you some, you know, appetite stimulants and some antibiotics, but you don't need to bring them in. But that can, if your dog is very sick, that is not, that's a disservice as well. So you need to get them in to be seen, because they could have pneumonia.
Yes. And that would be what kills them.
And that could be what kills them. And you don't, or if you've gone with a day or two of symptomatic therapy that your vet dispensed and it's not working, call back and say, no, you know, my dog is not getting better. I feel like maybe we should get a chest X-ray or something like that. Because, you know, these are the, a lot of times, you know, some clinics don't want these dogs to come in because they are a huge contamination risk.
Well, then people are going to have to be outside and be seen outside. And if you don't get there by car and you get there by, you know, public transport, I guess you really shouldn't be having the dog walk there, because every place he walks, he could be spreading the disease. Why would they dispense antibiotics when doctors should all be aware, whether human or animal, that antibiotics are being overused generally and overprescribed generally, and really could be deadly if you're wasting it. And then when you really need it, because you did develop pneumonia or some horrible sinus infection, now you've got the wrong antibiotic on board, or you've become sort of too tolerant to it. What about that?
Well, you know, I bring it up because it's a reality of what happens in the real world.
Okay.
Would I recommend that, you know, would I recommend ever that a veterinarian, sight unseen, has a coughing dog and they just put him on antibiotics? Absolutely
never,
not.
Never.
But for all those reasons you just said. But, you know, I do a lot of consulting. I know exactly what happens out there in the real world.
Yes.
These dogs that have been boarded, they're like, eh, maybe it's kennel cough, or maybe it could be dog flu, but we're just going to cover our possibilities. And then if they're not getting better, give us a call. So, you know, be your own pet's advocate. But be smart about it, you know, in regards to minimizing contamination to other dogs within a veterinary clinic space. So say, why don't I, you know, if your vet hasn't, you know, some vets don't have a protocol for infectious diseases because they're small clinics. We don't deal with these kind of outbreaks.
That's right. It's very rare. It's almost,
That's not their fault. You know, it's like, but we can common sense say, you know, I'm worried my dog could have the flu. I'm going to stay in the, keep him in the car. When you guys are ready for him, come out and get him. You know, ideally the vets should be gowned and gloved. And
hey, look at Ebola, Donna. Look what happened in America, where the couple of hospitals that had isolation units, they still had no protocol. They didn't have the right equipment to protect the caregivers or the ambulance or the cop car or the airplane. So they
and
kind of knew something.
Right now, how our concern isn't to the humans, but it's
right.
Humans can also work with other dogs who they may infect.
But what I'm saying is that these sorts of emergencies, even if you think, well, I guess it could happen, no one has a fire drill about this. No one has a chance to practice, develop a protocol, know what to do. Everyone's sort of punting, and that's what happened with the few Ebola patients that came here, that there were terrible misses, and by some miracle of, you know, someone jumping on it hard enough, it didn't spread and didn't kill people, but it absolutely could have. So I guess that that's, you know, similar to this. It's like we can't be complacent, and just because we don't see it in our neighborhood, the fact that it could be there any minute, I guess, because it really could, because dogs are now traveling so much with their people for pleasure. And then they're, you know, just to wrap up, these dogs that are on these big transports moving adoptable dogs from the south to the north and the northeast, should those transports, if possible, be halted? Are those dogs going through areas where they could themselves become infected?
Well, yeah, and just the fact that there are large groups of dogs in a single space, you know, I mean, you know, just that alone, but whether or not they go through these potential contaminated areas. But yes, I mean, you know, any communal groups of dogs right now, big groups, you know, I mean, we've got to be, you know, racetracks and shelters and transports and all those things. I mean, communal groups of dogs right now should, you know, I don't know of many boarding facilities around here that are open anymore at all.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's shut down because, you know,
It's been there.
I mean, we've had thousands of dogs in this small area.
Yeah, because if they say 1,000, it's sort of like the pet food
recall.
Those are
the ones getting reported.
Yes, and even then they underreport it because they don't want to alarm people, which is good maybe, but maybe not, because then people are like, well, but my dog's really healthy, and
but,
all my friends'
CDC's
dogs are healthy.
Really aware of that. They know if they're getting 1,000 reported, what is it, 5 times more than that?
At least. It's some big old number. Dr. Donna, we're going to let you go back to your bed rest and fluids and lie low and no stress. Thank you for jumping on this with me so that we could help people understand what's going on and understand that what happens in Chicago happens to all of us. So we need to all be aware of what's going on the alert. And I'll be finding out some more about China and what's happened in the last 7 years over there in a very different culture, a culture where these problems are often dealt with by mass cullings and killings, which sounds barbaric to us, but it was done to millions of pigs and millions of chickens and ducks and geese. Right. This is unfortunately how large groups of animals that get a disease that could be deadly to other like animals or the human animal often have to be dealt with. We're obviously not going to get to that place in America.
No,
we have a different system here, but let's all be on alert, and your very old arthritic dogs are the lucky ones because they're probably staying home. And if they're the ones most at risk to die, certainly you don't take your young puppy anywhere, right? I mean, forget it. You should learn teach your dog some board games and how to play video games, because you shouldn't be going out with other dogs.
Yep.
Donna, thank you so much. All of you guys, stay safe, and we'll give you updates on Facebook and Twitter and stuff if there's anything that we feel you need to know, because Dr. Donna is very much in the mainstream of knowledge. Thank you so much, Donna.
Take care.